Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson. Today, I'm talking with running historian Katie Holmes about the five women who changed running forever. I'm on my own this time, no Ben and no Jane, so I'll keep this intro really brief. Runner's World were spotted out in the countryside recently. I say countryside, Dorking. I think Dorking's countryside. Doing the first Grape South Run, so that's running to wineries, which I thoroughly recommend. So we ran to Denby's Vineyard, little 10K around Box Hill, and then had some wine, which was nice. Thoroughly recommend it. I think Denby's is also the home of the Bacchus Marathon, which is kind of the UK's answer to the Medoc Marathon. I hope all your running is going well, and without further ado, I'm going to invite on our guest of the week.
Guest of the week, here in the studio. Guest of the week, sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete, could be a physio, or a complete unknown.
So we're here today with running historian Katie Holmes. Katie specialises in the history of female running, so I thought she was a perfect person to compile a list of five women who have changed our wonderful sport forever. So Katie, welcome to the Runner's World podcast.
Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be here.
Before we start with the list, do you think there's a tendency in running for female stories to be overlooked?
Yes, I think that there is. I think there are a lot of stories that we just don't know about. For example, when women were trying to get into long distance road running, you know, that often women were turning up and running in races unofficially. And often we just don't know about those stories. And also, I think that, you know, the male heroes of running have tended to get more publicity and their stories are better known generally.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, even the case of like the mile, everyone knows about the 4 minute mile, don't they? But actually, the 5 minute mile being broken, that's something that actually a lot of people would be like, oh, I didn't realise there was that was a kind of thing for women to break. And it was as important and as amazing when that happened.
Yeah, that's right. Deanne Leather broke the record just 23, the 5 minute barrier, just 23 days after Roger Bannister ran the 4 minute mile. But it was nothing like his race. She didn't have pacers or got lots of press coverage at the time, but it's not as well known now.
Okay, great. Well, let's go into the list then. So who's your first name of one of the five women that changed running forever?
Okay, so I've got to start by saying, of course, that it's not just five milestone moments in the sport. There are dozens, hundreds, thousands of women who changed running. So it's actually quite hard to come up with a list. But I chose five women who I think had a real impact on public awareness of women's running. And I think it will become evident why. And the first one is Fanny Blankers-Koen. And she was a Dutch track and field athlete. And she actually never competed on the roads because she was at her height in the 1940s and 1950s. And there really was no road running internationally for women then. But she really came to fame at the 1948 Olympics, and she was the absolute superstar of those Olympics. She became the first woman to win 4 gold medals at an Olympics, and also she's the only woman ever to have won 4 gold medals at a single Olympic Games.
Yeah, wow. What an achievement that is. Yeah, in running. I mean, I'm trying to think of another example of that anywhere where that's happened. Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, so she had started her athletics career. So she was born in 1918, and she'd started doing athletics. Basically, she was good at lots of sports, but she chose to do athletics because she thought it was her best chance of getting into the Olympics. She was very competitive from an early age. And she was at the 1936 Olympics and competed there, but didn't win any medals. But at that time, of course, she was only 18. But she did get Jesse Owens' autograph. And then she managed to keep, unusually, she managed to keep her athletics career going during the Second World War, when Holland was occupied by the Nazis. You know, there were lots of privations, and she managed to keep competing. And then when the 1948 Olympics came around in London, that was her moment. And she won medals in the 80 metres hurdles, the 100 metres sprint, the 200 metres sprint, and the 4x100 metres relay. And the 200 metres was actually a new event for women in the Olympics. So that was the furthest women could run. You know, men were running the marathon, but the women were limited to 200 metres. And she actually could have won more medals, because when she came into the Olympics, she was the world record holder in the high jump and the long jump. But athletes weren't allowed to compete in more than three individual events, so she had to choose which one she wanted to compete in.
Wow, it's amazing when you say about the 200 metres. I mean, it seems so preposterous now, and I'm sure some of the other examples you pick will be talking about other sort of limitations that were on female runners, but the idea that women were sort of too frail to run more than 200 metres just seems unthinkable today, yes. Doesn't it? But there you go.
Yes, and the other thing that's notable about her is that she was the mother of two children in 1948, and she was 30 years old, and a lot of people said she's too old. And she also got lots of letters saying that she shouldn't even be going to the Olympics, but she should be staying at home with her children. So it wasn't just that she became, you know, internationally known. It was also the fact that she was, you know, a mother and 30 years old, which was seen as, you know, really past it in those days. That was, you know, that really marked her out.
What do you think the impact of her winning those goals was? Do you think it had an impact on, say, other mothers who might be thinking that running wasn't for them? How is she kind of remembered also in Holland?
Well, she's you know, very well remembered in Holland. I think there are two statues to her. There are Fanny Blankers-Koen games every year. And I think that the difference that she made was she just brought women's athletics to the fore, really. You know, she was really probably the first real international superstar, female international superstar in athletics. And, you know, that really showed what women could do. And of course, she also showed that you could still compete when you had children. She wasn't the only athlete at the Games who had children, but, you know, it was just showing that you could still compete and you could still be at the top of your game at 30 as well.
Yeah, amazing. Okay, great start, that one, I think. What's number two then?
Okay, well, number two you may have heard of is Catherine Switzer. And she's one of the most famous endurance runners of the 20th century. And it's not really because of her performances, it's because of what happened at the Boston Marathon in 1967. And so Catherine Switzer was a 20-year-old journalism student at Syracuse University in New York. And she'd started training with the men's cross-country coach, and she managed to persuade him that she could run a marathon. She ran 31 miles in training, just to make the point. And the other thing that she managed to do was to get an entry to the Boston Marathon, because in those days, of course, marathons were men only. The furthest that the American Athletic Union allowed women to run on the roads was 1.5 miles. And so she entered with her initials, which was common at the time because, of course, it was only men entering, so you didn't need to say whether you were a man or a woman. You know, it was obvious you were a man. She entered using her initials, and she got fellow male runner to pick up her race numbers. And so she actually got numbers for the race. But once she'd started the race, the press pack, somebody told the press pack that there was a woman in the race, and there was a press flatbed truck with loads of photographers on, and they all sort of, you know, went to where she was in the race and started filming her, interviewing her as she was running along, taking photos. And the race director found out about it, and he came running up behind her, and he tried to rip her numbers off, and he was really assaulting her. And there are a series of photographs that show this assault, and then also show her boyfriend, Tom Miller, who was a hammer thrower, basically pushing him out of the way. I think he actually knocked
the shoulder
bar. He actually knocked him to the ground. And so really this just became a milestone moment in the fight for the women's marathon, because those pictures that, you know, they're really shocking. They're still shocking today when people see them for the first time. They're really shocked to see it, because it really just shows the barriers that women were facing and how hostile race organisers could be. And then the other thing about Catherine Switzer is that she then, after this race, she then went on to organise the Avon Women's Running Circuit, which organised races around the world and got thousands of women running. And she was part of the campaign to get the women's marathon included in the Olympics.
Yeah, it's an amazing legacy, isn't it? And someone was telling me the other day that the Avon Marathon in 1980, you know, so a year before London was there, women were running on the streets of London, and it was actually, it was kind of a nice little kind of prompt to the London Marathon to actually try and get their own race out there as well. I think the story of Catherine Switzer and Jock Semple, the director, is amazing, isn't it? Because they had this unlikely friendship emerged years later, and he actually became this unlikely advocate for female distance running. So it shows you what the changes that can be made through kind of extraordinary effort on a few people's parts. I think she's hugely inspiring. So she's got to be in there, hasn't she? No list is complete without Catherine Switzer.
Yes, the Boston Marathon did eventually admit women in 1972, she ran there along with eight other women. I have to say as well, there were, of course, other people who were also campaigning for the marathon to go into the Olympics, including Jacqueline Hansen, who headed the International Runners Committee.
And it was 1984, wasn't it?
Yes, Los Angeles, 1984. So it really was a long time coming. And that London, the Avon London Marathon in 1980 was actually really important, because it was held just before the IOC were going to meet to decide whether to include the marathon in the programme.
Well, who's third on the list then?
Third on the list is Joan Benoit, or Joan Benoit Samuelson as she is now. And she really... She goes onto the list because of that iconic moment when, on the 5th of August 1984, when she won the inaugural Olympic Women's Marathon at the Memorial Coliseum Stadium in Los Angeles. And it's quite a story as well, because she'd overcome a serious injury. She'd sustained an injury in March and had to have surgery. And then just 17 days later, it was the US women's marathon trials for the Olympics. And she managed to win it. but she still wasn't the favourite in the race. That was Greta Weitz of Norway. But in the end, she actually broke away from the other runners after just a few miles, and she maintained a lead. And then when she enters the stadium, she had a clear lead. So she really ran a whole lap of the stadium almost completely basically on her own. And she was wearing this sort of silver vest and shorts, and she had a white cotton cap on that she'd been wearing during the race. And as she runs around, she takes the cap off and sort of waves it triumphantly in the air. The noise and the crowds was amazing, about 90,000 people there. And, you know, they were all cheering, and it was just an incredible atmosphere. And then she just, you know, she crosses the line with her arms aloft, and it's just such a moment in women's running history.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Yeah, it's her sort of coming out the tunnel, isn't it? It's got
this kind of
amazing moment. Yeah, yeah. And still running, right? Yeah. I think ran London this year, I believe.
Yes, she did. That's another great thing about her, is that she carried on running. And actually at London this year, she set the American V65 marathon record. So
brilliant. I love that. I love that when people look like it's not just it's like a lifelong thing. I think that's it's even more inspiring. Yeah. And I can't believe that about the surgery, because it was knee surgery, wasn't it? I
think arthroscopic knee surgery. And that was 17 days before the marathon trials. Which was in May. So
it's amazing. I've actually had a very similar operation, and I wasn't moving for about 2 weeks. So to win a marathon trials and then go and win the Olympics it's amazing. Okay. Who's next on the list?
So next on the list is Tegla Lerupe. And the reason that I've chosen her is that she, so in 1994, she won the New York Marathon, and she was 21 years old at the time, and she was the first Black African woman to win a major marathon. She was also the first Black African woman to break the world record, which she did twice. She held the world record for 3 years. And she started, you know, she had a very humble start in life. She grew up in a rural area of Kenya, and it was an area with kind of tribal wars and problems, tribal difficulties. And, you know, she had lots of siblings. She looked after farm animals and, you know, looked after her younger brothers and sisters. And to go to school, when she started school at six, it was a 10K run to and from school. So, you know, she didn't even get her first pair of running shoes until 1989, when she was, you know, 15 or 16. So a completely different beginning from the other women that we're talking about today. And from that, you know, she rose to win marathons, and really she paved the way for all the Kenyan marathoners, and also, you know, just Black African marathon runners and distance runners who, you know, are doing so well today.
Yeah. It's surprising how recent that is, because I think when you think about East African dominance in distance running, it feels like maybe something that's been going on since time immemorial. You know, it's kind of just, you know, always been there. But actually, we're talking about we said it was the 90s.
It was different for women. I mean, Bekele had from Ethiopia had won the Rome Olympic Marathon in 1960. So I think African men kind of got access, you know, were able to start distance, sort of get onto the international stage a bit earlier. But I think for women it sort of lagged behind. And actually Athletics Kenya they weren't interested in having her as an athlete initially, because they said she was too small and too thin. She's just only 5'1", and then she started doing well, you know, she managed to win races and as a teenager, and they realized that they, you know, she was a talent. And the other thing that is, I think, truly remarkable about Tegla Lerupe is that she's dedicated her life to harnessing the power of sport to promote peace. So she set up the Tegla Lerupe Peace Foundation in 2003. She organised a 10K race in the area where she lived, which had the aim of bringing different tribes in the community together to get them to run together. And that went on for 12 years, and it was really successful in bringing communities together and getting people you know, leaders of tribes to sort of commit to peace. So she's had a huge impact. And then more recently, she was instrumental in getting the refugee Olympic team into the Olympics. And she's set up a training camp for refugee athletes in Kenya and through her Peace Foundation. And she was actually the chef de mission for the refugee team at the 2016 Olympics and the Tokyo Olympics.
Wow. It's an amazing CV, that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Fantastic.
She's quite a woman.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
So who's the last name on the list, though?
Okay, well, I've not gone... I've sort of stopped around the turn of the century. So I chose Paula Radcliffe because of her performances, which, you know, just make her stand out in the history of women's marathon running. So she set the world record for the first time on the 13th of October 2002 at the Chicago Marathon. And she brought the record down by 1 minute and 29 seconds, which was a huge, you know, a huge drop in the time. And then just 6 months later at London, she ran nearly 2 minutes faster and set the record of 2 hours, 15 minutes and 25 seconds. So she held the record for 17 years until Bridget Koskay broke it in Chicago in 2019. So that's like the longest time that any other woman held the record was Greta Weitz, and she held it for nearly 4.5 years.
Wow.
So, you know, no one's ever going to hold the record. I imagine no one's ever going to hold the record for as long again. So, you know, she really stands out for that.
Definitely. And set in old-fashioned shoes as well, right? There wasn't a carbon plate involved in that record either.
So
it's probably even more extraordinary in some ways.
Yeah.
Anyone, I mean, a lot of people are familiar with the world record run, but just the video of the last mile and how sort of hard she's trying, despite winning by, you know, like probably about a mile up the road and the other competitors. It's absolutely incredible. And it sort of reminded me that when I think I'm trying during the last parts of a marathon, I'm probably, there's probably still more to give, I think.
Yes, we could all be inspired by her.
I was going to ask you actually, like, of this, when you put this list together, does it, these people that have inspired your own running, Kate, as well? Do you look to their example and think actually it makes you proud to be a female runner?
I think it's just one of those things when you start researching the history of the sport that you come across so many women who have gone before you and, yes, who inspire you in different ways. I think with someone like Radcliffe, it can be, you know, obviously with elite runners, it can be sometimes hard to identify with them. But at the same time, they've all started in the same place. And, yeah, so I think we can all take something from, you know, from their performances and then also how they choose to use their you know, their fame and what they choose, you know, what messages they choose to communicate about running as well.
Do you think there's any areas in running currently, like where the biggest kind of inequalities are, or where you think change is most needed?
Well, I think in terms of, I mean, globally, obviously there are countries where women don't have the freedom to run. And that must be the most important issue facing, you know, affecting women's running, that not everyone is free to run. I mean, domestically in the UK, we've got the cross-country issue.
The run equal stuff.
Which is a somewhat complex topic, I think. But you know, one where I think change will come about, but it needs to. We sort of need everyone to be on board with that change. Yeah. And I think that's what's taking a while.
Yeah, I think that's it. If anyone's unfamiliar listening in, that's the rule in England. Certain races, women run a shorter distance than men. I think the national is probably the most high profile of those, but there's quite a few. And I agree. I felt like it was something that was going to be just rightly changed a few years ago when the campaign took off, because it just seemed like total common sense. But it doesn't divide as evenly down gender lines as some people would think, actually. And I think Paula Radcliffe is someone who's possibly not in favour of it. So there are sort of notable female voices who are not completely convinced by it as well. But I think it will happen. I think it's just something that it's kind of complex and isn't. It's not something that's going to happen overnight, I don't think.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that for elite athletes, or you know, the purpose of cross country can maybe be quite different from you know, for club runners. And for most of us club runners, well, I think for a lot of club runners, it doesn't make sense for distances to be different, but elite athletes who are training for the track may prefer shorter distance races. Although, of course, the Run Equal campaign is not saying that everybody has to run, you know, has to run the distance that the men's race is currently. It's, you know, that there are lots of different options that organisers could use to, you know, to offer different distances, which could be open to both men and women.
Yeah, I would always choose a shorter distance cross country. Particularly the Southern. I mean, the Southern's like 15K or something, isn't it?
Is it?
So I'd be like, right, anything shorter, please, would be good. Was there anyone, I'm sure that it was really difficult whistling down the list of five, of course it was, but are there any like particularly notable sort of exceptions on the list that you'd like to have made room for if you could?
Oh, people that I haven't included. Well, I would have loved to include Dale Gregg, because I've spent a lot of time researching her. She ran, so I think actually offers the opportunity to point out that, of course, Catherine Switzer wasn't the first woman to run a marathon. Some people think that she might have been, but in 1966 and in 67, Bobby Gibb ran the Boston Marathon. She just didn't have any numbers. But in 1964, Dale Gregg, who was from Paisley in Scotland, ran the Isle of Wight Marathon, which was notoriously hilly. And she became the first woman to complete a marathon distance in under 3 hours, 30 minutes. And I think there were 69 starters and 19 of the men didn't finish. Wow. She did. Yeah. And she had to start 4 minutes before the men, so that they could say she wasn't in a proper race.
Right.
And she had an ambulance following her around in case she collapsed. You know, it wasn't really necessary.
No, not at all. That race is still going.
It is, yes. And it hosted the first English National Women's Marathon Championships in 1978.
Yeah. Great legacy. Apparently, as a race, it's struggling to get enough runners now. So if anyone's listening to it, you want to go and support a race that's been on the right side of history for, you know, for a long time.
Yes.
The Isle of Wight Marathon is the one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Kate, if anyone wants to find out a bit more about the work that you do, where have you got a website? Where can people go?
Yeah, my website's called Run Young 50, so that's runyoung50.co.uk. And I'm also on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram, so you can catch up with my running history work. And also I publish stories of women runners over 50 as well, celebrate their achievements.
Thank you very, very much for making the time to come on the Runners World podcast, talking about the women who have changed our sport for the better. Really, really good to talk to you and really appreciate your time.
That's great. Thank you for having me.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runners World podcast. Thanks very much to our guest, Katie Holmes, and to you, of course, for listening. What did you think of the list that Katie put together? Have you got any people you'd like to add to it? Let us know at podcast@runnersworld.co.uk. You can once again subscribe to 3 issues of Runner's World for just £5. Head to hearstmagazines.co.uk/Runner's World podcast to get this exclusive offer. You can listen to the Runner's World UK podcast on Acast, iTunes and all your favourite podcast apps. Just search Runner's World UK. Please subscribe. It makes us very happy. Thanks for listening and see you again next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavourless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.